This episode is sponsored by Sanebox, a great way to focus on the important emails and boost your productivity.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Coronavirus takes a bite out of sentiment. It's an awful week for markets, which ends with an oversold alert. Bonds bid and the 10 and 30-year Treasury yield hits an all-time low. And our guests today are Sarah Potter from You Can Trade and Tom McClellan from the McClellan Market Report. All this and much more on episode number 651 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Oh, what a week it was. Oh, my. Well, hello there. How are you doing? I mean, it was unbelievable this week. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of The Disciplined Investor, president of Horowitz & Company, an investment advisory firm. Also the co-host of DH Unplugged. Each and every week, myself and John C. Dvorak get together and we talk about a whole host of things that are, well, not your usual take on the news. So you need to make sure to check that out. Before we get started today, I want to mention that we are officially now, here it is, the official celebration of my birthday month. Yep, I'm going to be, dare I say it, 55 double nickels. So what this means is that the portfolio review project is now officially underway. And what you could do is just send us your portfolio holdings. It's not something we haven't done before ever. Only do this for clients, but we're doing this through my birthday month, and you can send in your portfolio holdings, your statements, or whatever you have, and we'll review the asset and sector allocation and adjusted risk and a whole bunch of other metrics. Yes, it's free, and I'm doing this as a thank you and kind of a reverse birthday present to you for my birthday. You could go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew drop-down on the top right there, and then you'll be able to securely upload the information about your portfolio, and then we'll get it. So then we'll send you back a report that will give you a whole bunch of really cool information about your portfolio. We'll talk about it if you want. I suggest you take advantage of this. We're only doing it for the month of March. So now with what's going on with markets, maybe it's probably one of the better times to consider using this. I could have planned it any better to help you out here because obviously we know what happened last week. So it is definitely a good time to do this. Now, I want to get into the discussion of the market and the consumer psychology that's going on. Last week was a rotten week for markets. I mean, we see that the Dow Jones Industrial, the S&P 500, the non-U.S. markets, whether emerging markets actually held up really well. But foreign markets developed, really got smacked, 12, 13% for the week. That's ugly. It's one of the fastest declines. The velocity of the move that we saw last week was the most intense for decades. Probably since back in 2008/2009 era. And what's going on? I mean, what's happening? And why all of a sudden last week, not a little drip the week before that was substantial? Nothing. Well, it seems to be that there's a realization about the problem and what the potential issue is with economies and how this virus, this COVID-19, this coronavirus is stopping people from spending and doing all sorts of things. Because from what I understand, we have about a 14 to 21 day incubation period when you get infected before you see any overt symptoms. And during that period of time where you have no symptoms, the problem is you're contagious. So why are people nervous? Well, think about this. We have the potential for geometric growth of the infection rate if you consider that you don't know that you're contagious. And during that period of time, well, you're meeting people and you're shaking hands and you're giving hugs and kisses and breathing on other people, or other people are breathing on you, however you want to look at it, and then they get the virus. They don't know about it for a period of time. So technically, the infection rate and the growth of this can be astronomical. Now, of course, it's not necessarily deadly. In certain cases, of course, it is. But nobody really wants to take the risk. And here's the problem. If you don't have any idea that you're contagious, I mean, if I come over your house and you invited me over for dinner and I see that you're, you know, you got some horrible condition, you're bleeding from the eyeballs, I may say, you know what, hey, maybe we'll do this another time. If you're sniffling, if you're look like you have a fever, if you're having a terrible cold, you may cancel the dinner in a period of time that you're contagious. Now, in this circumstance, we have no idea who's contagious and who isn't. Am I going to take the risk of maybe flying in certain areas that have a higher probability of people that have the virus? Am I going to go on a cruise ship? Am I going to be in a sporting event, a closed room, a restaurant? This is what people are thinking. They're freaking out. So because we don't know who's contagious and who isn't, the problem is that people are getting pretty jittery. They're getting nervous about doing things. They're staying away from restaurants. They're staying away from crowded areas. And when we see that governments are canceling sporting events, when they're closing off areas entirely, when they are trying to contain this through a variety of different efforts, which are as extreme as total lockdowns of a city, people get nervous. Over the weekend, we saw that this is playing out. We knew it was, but it got worse because the China numbers, the economic reports on services and manufacturing came in at the lowest level. Listen to me, the lowest level in history. They hit 36. Remember, we talk about the ISM or other PMIs that are 50 is a level that is a line in the sand between contraction and expansion. Anything over 50 considers the fact that things are growing, things are doing well, whether it's the manufacturing area or whether it's factories, et cetera, or maybe services, which are like restaurants and possibly other areas in the service industry, or, you know, they are. And they came in at 36. This is lower than any time in history. And I'm talking about back to the total shutdown of the financial markets and the economies in 2000. We'll call it 7 through 9. In, you know, it hit different areas at different times throughout the world. That's concerning. Now, we probably expected that for the most part. It's a little bit worse than I had anticipated. You know, right now, most analysts had expected somewhere in like the 42 to 45 range. Coming in at 36? Ouch. And why is this? Because people, aside from the fact that that China has a total lockdown and confinement and is closing off areas like the, you know, Wuhan and Hubei areas of China and others. And we're seeing that there is the same thing going on in Italy to a degree, in Milan and Venice. The problem is that aside from that, people are like, you know what, I'm just not risking it. And the more we get noise from the media and reports from the CDC and various other agencies around the world that are involved in this whole health epidemic that's going on, the more people get concerned. And it may be irrational to a certain degree, but you know what? Why bother getting yourself into a situation that could be very detrimental to your health if you don't have to? So therefore, people are just saying, you know what? I'm not going to do it right now. Are the cruise ships a buy? Are the airlines a buy? The hotels? Is China a buy? The big question is going to be that there's a lot of talk towards the mid part of the day on Friday about, you know, we'll probably see some coordinated central bank action over the weekend. Now, with a 36 print in China, that ups the odds, substantially, for some kind of action to come in because markets have been frayed. People are just saying, the hell with this, I'm out. Not even thinking about what is the long-term prospect for this company, but you know what, I'm out. And they're going with the themes, you know, oh, we're going to go with the stay-at-home stocks right now. We're going to buy the companies like a Netflix. We're going to buy the staples, maybe 3M, which is kind of an interesting stock as they sell masks, of course. But this whole narrative is starting to be generated about, you know, you want to be out of services, airlines. You want to be out anywhere where they could be affected by an economic downturn, aside from, you know what, people will be staying at home. So maybe like a Grubhub potentially could do well, or maybe you're going to see some services that are related to the, you know, staying at home will do well. But there's this theme that's growing that anything outside of that's going to be real problematic. Now, I think that there's some rationale that we could apply and it makes sense for that. But I still think that, you know, we have to look at the effects and how the spread happens here in the U.S. China took extreme measures to lock down their economy, and that's what's showing up in here. We probably will see a V-shaped recovery in manufacturing. Services, I question, more of a U-shape there. We'll probably see a slowdown here in the U.S., probably not as severe, but just something to take a look at and something to consider. So the innocence of the virus and the ability for it to hide undetected for a period of, 14 to 21 days is really what's making this a dangerous economic weapon. What's interesting is that we have an indicator that we built here called the key reversal indicator. And I built it because I wanted to look for areas of extreme fear, extreme areas that are oversold in markets and overbought or extra exuberance. And only a few times historically have we ever seen a level that I'll just say is a point of oversold that we get clusters of oversold readings with. Let's just use this because that's what we use here, called the magenta bar. The magenta bar is when we have a reading so severe that it looks like we're oversold to a level that really needs to see some kind of resolution and a bottoming out that would bring us a little bit higher moving forward. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to recoup all the losses. We could see a very temporary bump, which we did see once we got this Friday afternoon. So we got this reading on Friday morning of this magenta oversold, -6 level on the KRI, or the key reversal indicator. And then the ramp happened towards the mid part of the day. In the last 15 minutes was out of control. And then after hours on Friday, we also saw a nice pop with the idea that maybe central banks will be coming in to do something here. Last time we reached this level was December 24th of 2018, that December 24th Christmas Eve low. And then the Fed made the pivot and things kind of went along and all that. So just something to consider in the big scheme of things when it comes to these markets. Remember, markets can't stay oversold forever. There may be some other drops coming in. We may see some more downside action. And I guarantee you, I can tell you one thing, it can be volatility because people aren't sure what to do. I mean, fortunately, we have a lower exposure to equities for our portfolios, and we really held up beautifully last week. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this is a time you really should be reconsidering how much exposure you have and where your exposure is, because this is something that is pretty serious. So do what you will. Hey, we have a new sponsor. This is pretty interesting. This is really cool. So let me take a second and discuss something with you. I don't know about you, but what's going on with emails these days? I mean, it's out of control. You get spam, junk, unwanted advertisements. You know what I mean? It is so distracting. And I got to tell you something. It's a huge time waster trying to sift through your emails all day, every day. But I found a great solution for you. It's called SaneBox. And it uses an artificial intelligence monitoring system for your inbox. What happens is that it basically scans all of your inboxes, and every email service works with this, and it separates the most important emails that you want to see from the ones that are just, I mean, simply time wasters. The emails that you need are in your inbox, and those that you don't are, well, scooted over to the Sane Later inbox. And working with it is really easy. If you know how email folders work, well, you got it. You know how SaneBox works. Find an email in the wrong folder? Well, just move it. Nothing to learn, nothing to install. Samebox works directly with every single email server or service that has ever been created. So you can get it for free and a $25 credit by visiting Sanebox.com/TDI. That's Sanebox.com/TDI. And with that, our first guest today is Sarah Potter, who is the president and founder of You Can Trade, as well as the author of How You Can Trade Like a Pro. And Sarah's actually down here in the Florida area with me, so I'm glad we can have her on today. Sarah, how are you?
I am great, thanks. And yes, I'm enjoying this lovely sunny weather. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. So I thought we'd start, first of all, let's tell everybody and inform me a little bit about what is You Can Trade that you founded?
Yes. Okay. So where we are today with You Can Trade and where it began is in a very different space. And I'm excited about our next steps as we are continuing to evolve. So You Can Trade today, if you go to the website, people will be able to see an opportunity to see myself as well as other coaches trade live with their real money and trading their accounts. So you get to see it right in front of you. We go through our analysis. You see the entries of trades. You see the management of trades. You see the exit of trades, the discussion as to why you would do that. Each of us have different trading styles. So you can pick a different coach that you want to follow to be part of. And then within that space, there is opportunities to ask questions live, get your questions answered, talk to other people. So we have this great community that's at You Can Trade. And then also we have opportunities for people to learn more formalized courses. So on top of being able to see the whole thing happen for real, you can also learn how to do many different areas. There's lots of courses available. And if you are super busy and you can't sit down and do that, we also offer a text service. So you can get the actual texts that each of the coaches are entering and exiting every day. We also have a ton of other free content there too. A lot of market analysis and some cool educational videos along the way.
That's interesting because a lot of people, I think it's hard to bridge the divide between the theory and the actual of execution, right? So where people can understand, you start talking about maybe an options trade or maybe a spread or a straddle or whatever it is. And then you put it down on paper and you have those usual charts that you see of what your profit and loss zones are and where it needs to be. But also in terms of equity trading and charts, a lot of people, you know, can some people are good at that. They can take that and then do something with it. But a lot of people, I think, especially when it comes to trading, it's so much easier to kind of watch and then mimic, don't you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a self-taught trader. And when I went through the process of learning how to trade, that was one thing that I felt really important to me. So if I kind of share with you a little bit about my background. So I, at the time, I didn't go to school for this kind of thing. I was in a different career. I was in curriculum, instructional design consulting. And then I just was working on my master's of education and decided I was going to teach myself how to trade. And because I have some good knowledge of background on how adults learn, I realized that was really a gap, and that's what I really wanted to create at You Can Trade, was an opportunity for people to not only just learn, like the textbook is important, right? Like reading my book is important for people to learn the concepts that you're looking for, but you need to see application. And what we all know is when we trade with money, money equals emotion. And so learning about something in a book or learning about something in the past isn't the same as dealing with it when the markets are live and stuff is actually happening all at once. And so that's why it was really important to me that people had that opportunity to see people actually placing the trades at the time, see the actual screens as if you're just over somebody's shoulder, because it's nice to be able to ask the questions on the fly. Like, why did you place that trade? Why did you pick that stock over the other? Why did you pick that expiry? You know, what's your stop target here? That kind of stuff. I think that's just so valid. And that's what really helps consolidate learning for people so that they can personalize their own trading.
That's great that you came from an educational background, because that really gave you the tools and the underside of how to create the opportunity for training courses, right? I mean, versus someone who's just a trader, let's say, and just says, okay, here we go. I mean, I have, over the last number of years, probably, I would say 10 years ago, there was a couple of people that I knew and they said, hey, you know, do us a favor, join in on our training. We want to, you know, let you in on it so you can give us some critique and all that. So they did the morning trading. And they did, you know, this whole process where they were trading their own money. It always made me kind of nervous. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how could they trade their own money when they're live trying to find other things, answer questions all at the same time, but I guess it's what you do. But, you know, always nervous that they're going to lose money just because they were trading. But it really is, I think that is a great way to learn. There's so many people out there that want to learn, and they first of all, they try to do it with real money, which there is a difference between real money and accounts that are unfunded, you know, just simulated accounts, right? And one of the things that I found, and tell me what you think about this, is that there is a difference between real money and simulated accounts on how you actually trade those, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's why it's so important that everybody knows that when we are doing this, and that it's our real accounts and it's real money.
Yeah. So from there, you have these courses, you teach people. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on. I want to first start with just a follow on to, you know, what you do. I want to hear about your daily routine as a trader, right? What are the things you start out the day with and then end the day with?
Yeah, I mean, forming good trading habits is essential to be successful. So one thing about me as well, I mean, I love to trade and I trade every day. But I mean, if I look back over the last 5-10 years, the way I've traded has kind of shifted over the years, depending on what I've got going on in my life. So I have a 3 and a 6-year-old, and I've been trading before them, and I traded with them when they were little babies on my lap. And then as I've moved into doing other things and they're a bit older, and then I've shifted back into different styles of trading. So there's lots of different ways to trade depending on how much time you have during the day. So I would say that my habits also change a little bit based on what I can dedicate to the market. Certainly being very aware of how much time in the market can you actually dedicate that focus time to it, because you want to make sure you have that. But the market can work around you and your schedule versus the other way around. So right now I'm trading primarily options, and I'm trading lately, because there's been so much volatility the last few days, I've also been doing some futures trading. So it really depends on what kind is my focus at the time, whether it's mostly futures or mostly options. And I kind of go back and forth depending on how much time during the day I can commit. But I like to always keep in mind that I, even though I love trading, I'm still trading in a way that I can do something else during the day. So I'm not advocating that, you know, I just place a trade and I set it and forget it. Of course, I'm still going to watch my trades on my phone, but I want to be able to still multitask throughout the day. I don't want to feel stressed throughout the day. Many people still have full-time jobs too, and they want to trade on the side. So I have a style of, I like to think that my style is allowing you to do all the good stuff that you want to do, which is why most of us trade anyways, right? Like, mm-hmm. I left my career in education because I wanted to have the day where I could go for a really long run, or I wanted to have a family and spend time with my kids. And I didn't want to be stuck to that like 9-to-5 job or stuck in front of a computer. So long story short, in terms of my trading habits, I come to the market fresh every morning. I do a live session at 9:30, just so we watch the market open together as well. When I get up there at 9:30, I try to look at the charts as if I don't have any trades on just before 9:30. So usually 9:20, 9:25, I'm just looking at the market. What did it do overnight? I pay particular attention to the ES contract, the S&P futures contract, to see what it did overnight. And I'm very interested in what happens just before the market opens, especially these days with all this volatility. So I'm looking for that just to be prepared. And I like to kind of have this outlook that's like, okay, it's not, I don't want to look at the market and say, oh, you know, I'm in Facebook, so I really hope it goes long today. I want to look at the market and say, if I'm neutral and I'm just looking at it today, not considering the positions I have on, what do I think is going to happen? And trying to have that neutral approach to your original analysis in the morning, I find is helpful. Obviously, as the market opens, I'm going to look at the positions that I have open at the time to see how they've opened. I generally don't trade right away, though. Between 9:30 and 9:40, the first 2 5-minute bars, I'm generally hands-off on the computer.
Yeah, that's a messy time.
Yeah, I mean, and that's for both entries and exits. So I love to put on, especially right now, I like to be putting on a trade at the morning open and putting on a bit of a day trade. But I generally like to let the first two 5-minute bars open and close, just to get a little sense of things. So I trade between 9:30 and 10 generally, and those are when I usually set up day trades, as well as I look to exit any swing positions I have on. And then I give myself a break after that, and I think that's really important. So at 10 o'clock, between 10 and 10:30, I generally like walk away from my computer altogether.
Ah, the old walk away. Oh, I know that. Oh, yeah. I get it.
But it's a habit. And it's just like, I don't want to get so fixated in the market that I'm not remembering that there's everything else going on in my life. So I kind of force myself away from it for that little bit of time. And then I do trade. I like to trade mid-morning is my favorite time to trade. So between 10:30 and 11:30 or kind of this 11 to 12, depending on the year or what's happening in the market, but in that area, now in that hour and a half zone is really where I'm putting on pretty well all my trades. That's the time I like, because I feel like it's enough of a balance that, you know, the market's open, you see how things are moving. Generally around 10:30 or 11 these days, we're seeing a shift, a change in the market from where it opened. And that's the move that I generally want to trade. And then I look to basically, in the afternoon, I try my best not to enter any more trades. I usually like to just hone in on that time. And then I'm like monitoring positions. And then hopefully the next morning at about 9:40, I'm exiting profitable trades that I've already set from the morning before. So that's kind of like what I
it's like, it's like cooking a stew versus flash frying.
Exactly. Yes. I want the coffee to percolate. So I love drinking coffee. I love coffee beans. I can talk forever about coffee.
Just tell me you're not a big Starbucks fan. Please tell me that.
I do like Starbucks if that's my, like, if I have to, but I really try to hit the local shops that have the really great premium roasted beans.
Yeah. I'm going to give you something to take with you. If you love coffee, you have to try Vietnamese coffee. Traditional. Okay. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Okay.
It's like creamy and it's almost like caramely, chocolatey. I don't know what's going on with it, but it's something. And it gives you quite the kick in the pants.
Okay, I'm in. I want some.
Yeah, it's really good. But, you know, what you're saying is just to back up on some of that in terms of, you know, letting the having your own life, but also having the markets work around you. So you went from bouncing your kids on your lap and trading that way to kind of now monitoring and maybe trading as you're waiting in the carpool lines.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like, you know, you don't. And the other thing is, it sounds to me, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds to me like you're also not forcing trades, right? You don't have to trade, right?
Yeah. So, and that's such a good point. And that's something I think you get as you trade for years, right? You start realizing that there's a level of automaticity to this. You're really looking for fairly consistent things. Like when I trade live every day, I don't really think about it too much anymore. I have to verbally talk it through, and that's helpful for other people, but it doesn't stress me to trade. And it doesn't stress me to look at the market and be like, oh, I can't find anything right now, because I know that, you know, I could look an hour later and it might be different. My goal, I always would love to say that, you know, I've got about at least seven, eight new trades a week on. But I don't force that. I mean, some weeks I'll have like three trades on, and other weeks I'll have way more, because it's really about finding trades that line up with really what you're looking for and not being too worried about how many trades you have. And sometimes the best trades you take are the ones that you didn't trade.
Oh yeah.
No?
Yep. Yep. The things that you didn't do. But what are some of the criteria that you utilize to find those and hone in? Is it simple moving averages? Is it some kind of other indicator? Is it just feel?
Yeah. So if I'm happy to share my workstation too. So I trade with TradeStation. If anyone wants to see my workstation, I use technical analysis to place trades. I'm happy to share it. You just have to send me an email. I'm happy to pass that on. But what I use is I use multiple time frames, and I like to look at those all at the same time. So I like a weekly, a daily, a 60-minute, and a 5-minute chart. Mm-hmm. All on the same symbol, and I want to look at them all at the same time. On those charts, I like exponential moving averages. I generally use the 8, the 13, the 21, these days, the 100 and 200.
Yeah.
It's moved so much.
Yep.
And I have those on all of the chart, like all of the different time frames, those are there. And so those are really my key pieces. Like, I cannot trade without that visual and seeing that. I use a candlesticks, and I like to see how candlesticks are holding up in terms of support and resistance on those exponential moving averages. I also pay attention to things like volume. I love the average to range, super useful tool. Mm-hmm. I put it on a daily chart, and I like to just have a good scope of how much, you know, that stock or whatever asset class you're trading is actually moving. And are you really setting a realistic expectation? So lots of times, like, I coach a lot of people, and a lot of times people are like, or even right now, it's a perfect example, right? So we've had 2 days where the market sold off, and then they go and they look at the market and they're like, wow, in the last 2 days, you know, this is just sold off so much. I should short it right now, and it should just continue to do that. But I mean, stocks get tired too. They will only go down so far. And so I think paying attention to the average true range off of a daily chart is super important to make sure you're not getting into trades that are never really going to hit the expectation you're looking for. The average true range helps people set more realistic profit targets, in my opinion, because you want to set a profit target that is realistic to hit within, I usually set it based on the average true range. So that's super helpful.
So I assume you're a fan of Linda Rashke?
Yeah.
I mean, she kind of really made that average true range a big, you know, she has a lot of indicators that really work off that average true range. So, you know, I think she's one of the ones that really penned that and made that very, made it popular at least. So now let's kind of shift over a second. And you have different trades on. You said right now you're trading more futures because of volatility, options. Generally speaking, options, are you trading them on individual securities? You're trading them on an index? You're trading them on futures? What do you do with your options?
Yeah, so any of the big companies that are well-known, I am usually trading quite consistently. So, you know, I love my Starbucks stock. I love trading options on Starbucks. Uh-huh. You know, Facebook, Apple, all the big guys I love. Right now in particular, financial stocks have been moving quite a bit, and so I've been enjoying that. I have a routine weekly SPY trade that we trade in the trading room that has pretty good consistency for me. It's kind of like my backbone trade that I really rely on quite heavily. So that's trading in the ETF. But again, like when I'm in the trading room and I'm placing the SPY trade, I will also show it and we'll be like, if you want to do this in the futures, like I'm happy to show people that you can pick that kind of trade depending on whatever market you like. So if you want to do it in the micro ES, or you want to do it in the ES contract, or you want to do it in SPX, or you want to do it in SPY with the options, you know, so people have that choice to be able to tailor a trade that works best for them, because we all have different tolerances for what markets we like. Like, so Twitter and I, like, I cannot trade Twitter successfully. I don't know why, but it just, for me, it doesn't work. Whereas, you know, I look at Costco and I can usually bang Costco's timing of moves really, really well. I always talk about in my book too, like I think you should date stocks. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can look on the news and someone will be like, oh, this stock is moving. Go, you should check this one out. But I think people want to build a familiarity with the stocks they're choosing to trade options on, or whatever you're trading to invest in. And it's just like dating. Like, the first date with someone is always great, but it's not really showing you the true character of the person. You know, you need to
get three kids. No kidding.
So it's kind of the same way for me with trading. Like, I need to get familiar with how that stock moves, how the bid and ask moves, what happens on the day of expiry. So I'm paying a lot of attention to that. So I love to trade and bring in new stocks, but I think it's important that, you know, you're really getting to know them well. And, you know, I want to have at least three trades on in something new before I'm really ramping up my contract size, because I want to get a good feel for who it truly is.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what you're saying is really, you know, you understand the rhythm. It's kind of like dancing too, right? It's like, you know, if you have a partner that is new and you're dancing sometime a tango or a waltz, you may not be in rhythm. You got to take some time to get that all blended in so that you can be kind of working as one and know each other's steps as you go through it, versus buying and looking at a stock that you really don't understand why it's moving or how it moves or the feel, the flavor. But you're saying pretty much you want to really understand a bit about, you know, get kind of closer to it so you understand where it is. So that also, I think, again, I'm putting words in your mouth, but tell me if I'm right, but also you can understand where the ranges are on it.
Exactly. I'm like standing here nodding my head yes this entire time.
So, all right, let's kind of move to something else and bring it back, because there's been a lot of volatility in the recent markets. We saw a great move in January, and then things just fell apart in the beginning of February as this coronavirus scare and the possible pandemic epidemic is starting to move throughout the world. We saw a threefold increase in Italy this week. We saw the first case in Brazil. We're seeing that throughout Germany, there's more cases. Today, there was, you know, announcements of all sorts of things going on. Here's the thing. The volatility has spiked dramatically. The VIX popped to 30. How is that affecting your options trades? And what are you doing in terms of trying to minimize volatility and make profits on this whole condition?
Well, I'm trading a little differently right now. And I think anybody who's, this is in my opinion, anyone who's trying to buy and hold through this is having a tough time. I am placing much shorter trades right now. I am, for my options trades, I'm going out only 1 week out in terms of expiry, trying to reduce some of the risk because now the prices are higher in terms of those options. So I'm doing that because the moves are happening so fast right now. If I place a trade and within an hour, you know, I've made $100 a contract, I'm out because an hour later, the might just change directions again. So I'm taking profits as soon as those pop in the directions I'm looking for. And I'm a very, you want to be really aware of the volatility because it's not only influencing the costs are up in terms of the options, but, you know, recognizing that things aren't necessarily trending within the day anymore. We're seeing lots of big moves. And we haven't seen this in a while. Now, it'll be interesting because of the coronavirus, and I mean, that's pretty scary, and it doesn't sound like things are going to go away tomorrow. So I'm curious to see whether, as the media continues to report on the coronavirus, if it will continue to affect the market as much as it does. I mean, certainly this is going to be a big player on the economy, so you'd think that it would continue to see in stocks. But the reality is, in terms of like human behavior, it almost seems like the media can take these things for a while and then people just get used to hearing it. And I'm interested to hear, to see whether the market will continue to be as sensitive to what we're hearing or whether it will become a little more complacent with that. So I'm curious about that. But in terms of my risk and how I'm managing positions right now, I am, as I said, intraday trading futures very much. And if you think that, you know, these moves are too big for you, then, you know, maybe you don't want to be in the ES, but the micro E-minis are fantastic. You know, it's a bit of a smaller scale to take it, to dabble in these moves if the bigger moves scare you. So I'm kind of going back to that, utilizing that 5-minute chart. Like you said, identifying ranges that are where the markets are sitting within a range and then waiting for it to break out from the range that had happened over the last couple of days. So I've been looking at, like, particularly in the 60-minute chart, with taking about a week's worth of 60-minute charts and saying, okay, where is the range within here, and then how can I trade using that to my advantage? I've been doing that. But yeah, I mean, it's a different feel for sure.
Now what you talked about was the exhaustion theory and the boiled frog theory in one when it comes to possibly the ability to move past this whole news cycle of coronavirus. Now, just one thing I'll just point out, because I did do a good amount of studying on this. You know, obviously the big problem right now is it's no longer contained. And as we see more and more places become victim of this, and San Francisco saying it's an epidemic and possible borders being closed and nobody in or out, and JP Morgan saying, hey, you know what? If you've been to Italy and you come back and you work for us, you have to be at your home, quarantined for 14 days, do not come to the office. So there's a lot of things that are happening that are moving parts, and more so, in my opinion, at least, China shut down, the second largest economy in the world. That is going to cause major potential for supply shocks. And as the longer this goes on, the worse it gets. A small amount of this, no problem. While at the same time, the infection rate and death rate isn't as much as the normal flu in any given year, you know, it causes a lot of concern and consternation with investors that, you know, what happens if this does get to New York and it becomes an epidemic? And not so much that people are worried about, oh my, you know, I'm going to die from this. But it's the caution that people take in that they don't go out to the movies. They don't go out on a cruise ship. I don't know if you watch the cruise liners, RCL and CCL and Norwegian. They're just battered. The airlines battered. I mean, battered. Delta Airlines looks absolutely abysmal. So, yeah, you know, it's the concern about that. But how do you then gauge where you're going to be in terms of your option plays? Are you leaning more towards one side versus the other? Is there some, you work in the VIX at all? I mean, what is the same thing that you're working on, but just taking a different approach to it?
I'm looking at individual stocks on their own. So for example, like today I was at the open, I went long in SPY. I entered and closed that trade for profit. We did that in the trading room. And then I also shorted Expedia. And I've also already exited that position as well today. So we already had two really big trades just by taking advantage of how that move is happening right within that. So that 60-minute chart. But I think that's a good point. So I am not looking at stocks and saying, well, for example, Expedia, and saying, well, because of the coronavirus, I should go and short the stock. I'm still trying to look at the stock and say, but what trend is it in? How has it been moving over the last few days? Is there still room for that to go to continue as how it has been moving? And then do I want to place that trade that way? And I'm very short term. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I think, you know, lots of intraday, 24-hour, 48-hour style trading right now is pretty fantastic. You might as well use these moves to your advantage.
Yeah, it seems to me that you're on your trading cycle is like the Beal cycle for most people. You know, breakfast time or so, you look to enter trades. By lunchtime, you're out on certain ones. By dinner time, you know, you're kind of looking at that. You go overnight, nothing happens. You get up the next day and you have breakfast again and a trade on the side.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel like it's setting up just like a recipe. You know, people follow recipes all the time and produce the results of which they follow. And some people are going to follow a really complicated recipe and other people are going to make macaroni and cheese, but they're going to follow those directions. And I kind of look at the market that way. So like my SPY trade, for example, is a pretty simple setup. It's not very complicated and I do it weekly. It's either there, it shows up in the morning or it doesn't, and I'll try again the next day. Typically have that on at least two or three of those these days a week. I'd be in and out of that one. Whereas some of my other strategies, yeah, there's a bit more complicated. You know, it's more like making bread, like a nice baguette, which takes a little bit more time than, you know, making mac and cheese. But yeah, I follow the steps and just, you know, rely on those steps and then wait for the results.
Good. So what's the best thing that people could do? There's two sets of people that I want to really focus on here. So you have the people that are, let's call it buy and holders, some trading around the edges. They've been accustomed to low volatility for a long period of time. They buy and they hold, they add to it. And the other people are those that are not even invested. You know, they're not even beginning. They don't know what to do. So the people that are, let's start with those people. Let's start with the people that really have no idea how to even get started. What should they be doing?
How to get started in today's market?
Any market, really, any market. Let's put aside the excess volatility right now that may scare the hell out of new traders. Let's put that aside. Yeah.
Let's just say that legitimately. Like if someone is coming to the market for the first time ever today, like it is totally okay for those people to be like, oh, wow, that's a lot.
Right.
So that's good. I think obviously finding someone that you want to use as a mentor is really helpful in having the ability to ask people's questions. I mean, my book, How You Can Trade Like a Pro, is designed for beginners who want to get started in more of that. But I think you also want to think about, even if we step it one back and like think about, you know, what's your personality like? If you're trying to decide what kind of strategies you want to trade or what markets you want to trade, do you want to sell, do you want to buy, do you want to be long-term or not? You know, think about who you are and what do you think is your risk tolerance in other things? And don't try to be somebody different in the market than who you truly are and what you're comfortable with. So I think that's really important. Like, are you the kind of trader that your ideal scenario is that you get in something and you're okay with holding it? You know, you have larger drawdowns because you're okay with holding it a bit longer and seeing that through, and you're looking for a bigger win? Or do you like lots of quick moves, you know, profit and pocket it, usually what I call it. You know, think about who you are and then decide, okay, looking at the markets today, is that kind of style that I'm interested in, is it there right now? And doing some learning and investigation at the beginning, I think is super important. But concepts in a book are great and you need those, but you need time to watch the market, to see it, to see people trading it. Because that's really where you get that application of the knowledge that's critical.
And then finally, so you mentioned that you have these trading rooms, and we'll have some of the information on the show notes for episode, what do we have here? 651 on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. But where can people get in touch with you? How can they see what you're doing, understand about that, and learn more about what you offer?
Well, I would love to invite everybody to You Can Trade. If you go to You Can Trade, you can join our free community where we have lots of free content. And you can also, once you're in the community, you can also choose to have a 2-week free trial for any or all of the coaches that you would like. So you want to go in there and read all of the different channels that are there and decide, you know, which kind of coach, which style of trading is something that is interesting for you and that you want to go check out. And you get a 2-week free trial because it's important that you get to see somebody and say, you know what? Yeah, like this will work for me or no, it doesn't. I want to find somebody else. So that's really important. And we really value that opportunity, that free time for people to just see if that's good for them. So go on over there. You can also email info@youcantrade.com for more information. And yeah, or check out our YouTube page, Facebook page. We've got tons of stuff happening.
All right, good stuff. Sarah Potter from You Can Trade. I want to thank you very much for joining us and enlightening us to some of the areas of trading and how to get started and how to hone your trades to be a better money maker, whether you're bouncing some three-year-olds on your lap or, you know, making a pot of fresh Vietnamese coffee.
Fantastic. And I look forward to having that coffee soon. Happy trading, everybody.
Right. Thanks so much. And our next guest today is Tom McClellan from the McClellan Market Report at mcoscillator.com. I thought it was a really good day to bring him on because he's a great keeper of information related to markets and things related to advanced decliners anyway. So, Tom, how are you?
I'm well. It's been an exciting week, of course. I covered too early. Covered my short position too early in the week and didn't get all of the decline. But it's time to catch the falling knife, in my view. And so we're scaling into a long position on Friday.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Dow down another 1,000 points.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned that because what I'm seeing is something interesting and caught my eye is that one of the core items that you track, and there's a lot of things you track, of course, but is the, as you call it, the McClellan Oscillator. I thought we'd go over a little bit about that, even though we've done it way in the past, and talk about some of the historical levels, at least that I'm seeing, on the oscillator right now. So why don't we start with, what is the McClellan Oscillator?
Well, that's an indicator that was created by my parents back in 1969. And so, in fact, our website, mcoscillator.com, that's just a contraction of McClellan Oscillator. It is the difference between two exponential moving averages of the daily advanced decline difference, or the daily breadth. And what it does, effectively, is it measures the acceleration taking place in the advanced decline line. And so when you get a clustering of big 10-to-1 down days like we've had this week, all clustered together, that's a much bigger acceleration taking place in the advanced decline line than if you scattered them out over several days. And so we're seeing extreme readings like we haven't seen in many years.
I mean, this is pretty extreme, right? I mean, the velocity and the incredible, I mean, it's almost a vertical move that looks like it, you know, if you look at it wrong, it looks like it's going the wrong way. I mean, from, you know what I'm saying? Like not, it's not normally kind of tracking down and track, it's straight down.
That's correct.
What do you make of that?
And so the oscillator expresses that. But you know what? After this week, you don't really need any fancy technical indicators to tell you that you're oversold. You already knew that.
Right. So, but one of the things that I saw was yesterday, it was Thursday, the reading came in at about 398 to the negative side. I tracked that back historically. I couldn't see anything back to 2011. Now, tell me if I'm wrong about this. Then today, when we're recording this, I think it was down like 400 something.
Yes, preliminary about 400 minus 430. It was lower than the 397 back in the 2011 decline in August of 2011. That was brought about when the Fed decided to yank away the QE2 punch bowl all at once, and the market didn't digest that very well, and so there was an extreme sell off and an extreme low, and we're seeing similar kind of conditions now. At some point, we will get a bounce. And so then the question is, when's that going to happen? And when you have an ugly week like this, nobody wants to step in front of it on a Friday and bet that it's going to be better next week, because there's two more days of event risk over the weekend when more people could die of the virus, or who knows what else could happen. And so Fridays in a bad emotional market like this are typically not up days. And in fact, when you see a string of Fridays that are down several weeks in a row, that's usually a marker of a sentiment washout, because it tells you nobody wants to buy ahead of the weekend, and sentiments can go from one extreme to another.
So your historical reference on these kind of levels, because I know you do other ones too, where we say, hey, well, this is the start of a new uptrend. When we start seeing a couple of your other indicators, which is their summation, I think it's called the summation index, right? So when it starts to do certain things, it's a start of a potential longer term uptrend. But did we break that down totally with this last move of the McClellan Oscillator?
Well, the summation index changes every day by the value of the oscillator. So if you remember back to integral calculus in high school, you have the derivative and then you have the which is measuring the slope of something, and you can measure the area under the curve. That was the idea that my mathematician mother had for looking at the summation index. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's falling rapidly because of the really negative McClellan oscillator values. But you also seeing, we've got the VIX at 47. You don't get to see that very often. The VXO, which is based on the S&P 100, that's over 50. Pretty extreme conditions. And so eventually the fever is going to break and the market's going to be able to rebound. The question is, when is that exact moment?
Yeah, not only when is that exact moment, but right, you know, how much, right? I mean, is it going to be a temporary bounce, a nice, you know, 5% day on the upside, and then, you know, then what?
That's a good question. Back in December of 98, we had a really extreme low, and the market just started going back up again at the same slope that it was sliding down. And it was not just a temporary bounce. It was the start of a new uptrend. But in January of 2018, I'm sorry, I got the years wrong. January 2018, we had the VIX crash, and all you got was a temporary bounce, and then it thrashed around some more. So you have to wait and assess the quality of the bounce and see how the numbers show up as the bounce is going on to tell you whether it's initiation or just rebound.
So what's the importance of the advanced decline line in this whole process? I know obviously that's a big part of how you calculate, but what's just looking at the advanced decline line, what can you look into that and what is it that you see when you study that particular metric?
Great question. And let's define some terms about the advanced decline line. What technicians refer to, I mean, when they talk about the advanced decline line, that's a cumulative daily total of the advances minus declines run on a cumulative basis. So today, right now, we've got 224 advances and we've got 2,700 declines. So you take that difference and you sum it every day, and that's the cumulative advanced decline line. So the advanced decline line has been falling at a very steep rate recently because we've had these big negative breadth days day after day. And so the McClellan oscillator, what it's doing is measuring how fast that slope of the advanced decline line is changing. What's the acceleration taking place? The whole reason that we look at these things is that the advanced decline data will tell you better than the price data of what's happening with liquidity. You can get the S&P 500 or the Dow to move up if you have a few of the right stocks getting bid up. But what you want to know is how's the liquidity situation for all the rest of them. And that's in the advanced decline data, every stock gets a vote, whether you're a big cap stock or a little cap stock. And so you start to see good liquidity or bad liquidity indications showing up there when you poll everyone. And so that's what we want to know. The market can go through liquidity problems, as we saw in 2008, and as we saw in the instances after the Fed shut off the QE faucet rapidly, we immediately had liquidity problems, and that showed up in the advanced decline numbers. The market can have other problems too, emotional problems or sentiment problems, and the market can generally recover a whole lot faster from emotional problems than it can from liquidity problems. So you want to know what the state of the liquidity is. Right now we're having a little bit of both, where the emotion has gotten so bad that it's generating its own weather and it's creating its own liquidity problems. And the Fed is not helping. Right now the two-year note yield is below 1%, and that's the best guide for where the Fed should set its interest rate policy. And the Fed hasn't yet. They need to do an emergency cut in between meetings and get themselves with the program for what the bond market says needs to happen. They also need to stop pulling out of their intervention in the repo market, because that's yanking liquidity away in the middle of a sell-off. They're doing exactly the wrong thing.
Well, when did they start? I thought they've been adding to the repo market. And I think we edged up $400 billion over the last 2 months, 3 months.
That's changed. They're pulling away now, as they have announced that they are intending to do.
Yeah.
They intervened starting late last year and ended early January, and they've been pulling back away. And you can watch how the stock prices are falling just to match the slope of how they're pulling away from the repo market. For repo market, that's kind of arcane stuff about the Fed. You can think of it like a loan to a hedge fund. A repurchase agreement is when a big portfolio loans the Fed its treasuries and agrees. And so it's effectively a way to give hedge funds money to go investing in the stock market with, as opposed to using your own brokerage account with leverage. And so that's how the big guys do it. So when the Fed is pulling back out of that, they're taking money away from those big funds that would invest it in the stock market, and they're creating a liquidity problem that
at the wrong time.
Something they had invented by intervening in the first place.
Yeah, at the wrong time. I call it the non-QE QE. You know, because they've talked about how they're not doing QE. They're just, we're, you know, putting money in and buying assets and liquefying the markets.
That's not wrong.
You know?
Yeah.
So what other indicators do you look at on a regular basis? I know you do a lot of seasonality kind of analysis, and you have this great newsletter. By the way, where can people get your newsletter?
Come to our website, mcoscillator.com. You can see sample issues. You can sign up for a free trial of our daily edition for 2 weeks just to give it a try and see if it's for you. We do follow lots of different indicators. I like to use anything that works. If I could figure out how to use woolly caterpillars to predict the stock market, I'd do that. But I tend to look for indicators that have a better chance of of actually working. But we like to look at the things that nobody else is looking at too. So what we find, excuse me, pardon my voice. No, I have not been to China.
Yeah. I was thinking that.
we look at the normal advanced decline numbers for the NYSE. And it's a great indicator. But we also look at the advanced decline statistics for high-yield bonds that FINRA publishes. And that tends to be a really, really good indication of liquidity, because high-yield bonds are very undeserving of your attention. They're junk bonds. But they can do well or they can do poorly. And that tends to give an indication of how healthy the liquidity situation is. Before the coronavirus started dominating the news, those bonds were doing fine. So they were saying that underlying liquidity has been okay. And we're just in this an emotional sell-off for this week and a half period that we're in. And they're suffering along with everything else. But they were saying things were just fine before. So the message is that this is the type of dip that liquidity says we can bounce back from.
Right. So it's a liquidity issue. It's an emotional issue. news flurry issue. I mean, the headlines are fast and furious. And what I find most interesting is the liquidity item. If you could feel as you watch the ticks of the market move throughout the day in the last week or so, how it seems it's such small amount of liquidity pushing in, pulling out. And every movement seems to really be exacerbated in the market. And I guess that's just why the VIX is at the level it's at, right?
Yeah, and the VIX is at 48. Its highest priced futures contract is the March contract, and it's only at 29. So the spot VIX has gone way above all of its futures.
Yeah, I was looking at some options on the VIX, and there's a April 20 call that's trading at $6.50. So in other words, 26, right? You know, you're getting $6 on the 20, which is far below the spot and far below even the futures. Kind of weird.
So the VIX is driven by the traders of the S&P 500 options. Mm-hmm. That's how we get the VIX. Is what is the premium that's being added to those options? And so it creates its own market there. The futures market and the options on the VIX is a different market, controlled by different traders who have different opinions. And so when you get this wide disparity in opinion between the VIX futures market and the spot VIX, that can be an important tell. When you have this big premium of the spot VIX above all its futures, like we're seeing right now, that's associated with really important bottoms like August of 2015 or December of 2018. These are rare and wonderful opportunities. The problem is you're standing in the middle of opportunity, but is right now the moment, is this minute the moment, or do I have to wait an hour? That's the harder question to ask.
Yeah, right, because you get caught up in, okay, this is a general level that seems to be very reasonable. Actually, yesterday was a reasonable level also to start getting involved. And then, you know, you get another 1,000-point drop or whatever the number is, and then you come in and have to worry about the weekend numbers and news flow, and it is kind of weird. But let's just kind of step back for a second. Fact is that historically, when you see these kinds of levels and shapes of the McClellan oscillator, seems to be more of a buying opportunity than selling, at least on a short-term basis, right? Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. And you may have to tighten up your stomach muscles to endure another 2 or 3% that after you get in. But 5 or 6 days later, you're probably going to end up okay.
Yeah, I got you. Tom McClellan, I appreciate the insights. Again, everybody can check out the newsletter, which he has a free and sampler over on MC Oscillator. We'll have the information on how to get in touch with Tom over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, episode number 651. Tom, you have a great one. Hope your stomach muscles stay tight, but then you get a beautiful relief.
It's nice talking to you. We will get through this.
All right. I'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's going to wrap up another show, episode number 651 of The Disciplined Investor. Thank you so much for joining me. We're going to have some great guests coming up again, get through this whole discussion of what's going on with these markets, make some heads or tails out of it. And of course, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, find out all of the information about our guests. Episode number 651 notes. Also, ask Andrew, drop it down. Portfolio review. Send in your portfolio. We'll do that free portfolio review for you this month. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.